Morning, folks. This is Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're live at 102.9 FM, whistlefm.com, formerly Whistle Radio. Sharing the Burden believes in life recovery. We are a life recovery group, and we follow the 12 steps of sharing the burden to support the hurting. All are welcome at our meetings. We hold weekly meetings in several locations. Check out sharingtheburden.ca to find the meeting closest to you, or start your own. And we need one in Stouffville soon. Good morning, folks. This is Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're here today to talk about live, unrehearsed recovery. And folks, that may not sound like much, but that means it's true, it's real, it's not thought about. So what comes out of either Jason or my mouths this morning has got to be the real deal, because we don't have time to think of whether it's good, bad, indifferent. So we like to believe that living in the now is what makes the difference in life. Thinking about what happened yesterday and what may happen tomorrow is what kind of confuses the moment. And the moment is the only eternal peace that we have anywhere in this life. So, Jay, this is the first time we're recording a show at the same time as we're running live on Facebook or whatever you've decided to do over in your end there. I'm just going audio to see how it works. We seem to have a low connection here, I see. So that may just be because of the library. I'm not sure. But anyway, we'll see what happens. So we're going to talk this morning more about how this program works, some of the key components, such things as slogans, our permanent piece of the program and a piece of literature that's read every time we have a program or every time we have a get-together called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. If we get time, I'll read it to you. But it basically stresses what I've just said, that tomorrow and yesterday really only interfere with today and with the moment. If there's any way possible that we can focus on this thing between the last thing we did and the next thing we're going to do, in other words, now, if we can stay in the now, we can be in a place where time doesn't really move, yet life exists. And I don't really understand that, but I know it's true somehow. Do you know how, Jay? Yeah, you've seen it a lot of times, so you know that we do. And I believe when we're on the radio, we're in the moment, you know, very much, as long as we're speaking, you know. I know when I'm talking, I'm there. That's the only place I am. I'm not like a lot of lady friends I know who can do 20 things at once. I do one thing, I do the best I can at it, and then I go on to the next thing. Anyway, folks, I think I'll start with some of the slogans that we use in our group here. And what the slogans do is they allow us just a little bit of emphasis in any one particular area that we may be feeling something in the moment. So in other words, if, for instance, I've got a problem with this getting in the moment thing, maybe I can go with such things as living in the moment, or what's another one that fits well with that? Real-time thinking, real-time expression. These are pieces of slogans that we add once in a while when we need extra ones. But to stay in the moment is very key, especially on the radio. I mean, if we're live, we've got to be with it. As soon as I let my head wander just in the slightest, I lose track and fall off the wagon, sort of thing. Not off the wagon to go drink or drug or anything like that. That's not a problem in my present day life. And if it ever was, it was in my youth, and it's certainly not now. But other slogans such as, but for the grace of God, is one of my favorite ones. And I'm a believer. And by the way, folks, we're not a religious program, but we are a spiritual program. And we believe in some sort of connection to a higher power in this life. And without such, we believe that life is very difficult and probably cannot be lived to the utmost in any way, shape, or form without something greater, something to look forward to, a greater existence, a godly figure, something just above the race kind of thing, above the human race. And for us who happen to be Christians, that's God. That's God of Scriptures, God Almighty, Jesus, Son of God, and Holy Spirit sort of thing. But we're not here to push how that works or how we think it works or anything. We're here to say that everybody, absolutely everyone, is welcome at any open meeting of Sharing the Burden, regardless of whether it's one that we run inside of institutions. Now, if you're not in that institution, you're not able to come to that meeting. However, if you do happen to be someone who, for whatever reason, ends up incarcerated, you'd be very pleased to know that we're going to come back every week that we can get into that institution, and we're going to look for the people who want to see us, and we're going to have a meeting. So that consistency is a huge part of this program, too. If we're not, probably any program, really, if a program is not in your face, if you can't go to it moment by moment, I think you're going to have problems keeping with it. So, in other words, we'll say you have compulsions, or maybe you're even a professed alcoholic or addict, or as I say, just have one of the compulsive diseases out there, one of the compulsive mental illnesses, should we say. You need, absolutely need, number one, you need to express, but you need... You need support, and you need support that is consistent. And if we don't have it every moment of our lives, especially the addict or the alcoholic, if this person, if he or she is not living, living the experience of not being intoxicated, of not being, bent by way of use of drugs or alcohol or whatever else, if that's not happening, you're not going to live life the way life really was meant for you to live. So, when I say, but for the grace of God, what I really mean, especially in the situation where we're in institutions, especially jails or prison, each and every person in there, does not get to live, to leave rather, and we do. It makes a huge difference. But in our case, in the men's jails, they're all in orange, and we're dressed as we are on the streets in whatever colors we like, and hopefully not the same orange because that could get us in trouble in there. But I go very, very softly and gently, and I make the point as absolutely sincerely and honestly as I can that but for the grace of God, I would be in orange, they would be in street clothes, and that's how I see them. And I want them to know that I see them exactly as I see every person on this planet. And, I'm taught that. I'm taught that in religious circles, or rather in spiritual circles. I'm taught that in life in general, and I believe it's just a good way to live, to be able to accept and even to, in a sense, treat everyone, regardless of color, race, creed, or anything else, exactly the same way. In other words, to love them all the same way. And, love has a whole bunch of different connotations, and I'm not talking about in love. I'm talking about a decision to love mankind and womankind, and to make sure that each and every person that crosses my path gets treated the same way. Now, I may not be the most gentle and the most... thinking moment by moment type of person, but whatever I am, that's what I want to give to everyone who comes to me in any sense or form. So, we teach that. We teach that it's very important to accept everyone. That's another of our slogans, by the way, acceptance, to simply accept that what is. And decisions such as, I've decided to love everybody on this planet only means that I will be charitable to them. In other words, I will treat them properly as best as I can each and every time that I come across them. So people will only know me as Scott, and whatever he's doing or thinking or saying, he's going to be that Scott. He's not going to be something that's added to or taken away from. He is going to be that, And we have not really a rule, but something we always do. When we come into a meeting of sharing the burden, and by the way, we share exactly as that sounds, sharing our burdens. But every time we come into a meeting, we check at the door who we are in terms of professionalism, who we are in the outside world in terms of labels, how educated we are or aren't, how badly things have been, and et cetera, or how good they've been. And we focus. We focus on whatever the focus of the program happens to be. For instance, if we're in a step, and we have 12 steps that go with the 12 months, and for instance, this is February. And we're in February, so we're on the second step. So second month, second step. And we have a daily devotional that goes up to 30, and we choose the day to correspond with the actual date. So it's if it's February 18th, it's the day 18 of step two, and we go like that, and we roll like that year round. So whether in an institution or in a Sharing the Burden meeting outside of institutions, each and every group will take a little bit of time to focus on the daily reading so that we have a commonality and a way to work. And for those in jail, that makes a big, big difference. And I'll tell you why. In jail, of course, people, for the most part, are either in their range where there's several people, or they're in their cells where there usually is two, depending on the type of security involved. Sometimes segregated security calls for one in a cell, depending on the people and how easy it is for others to get along and serve them and so on. And sometimes there's many. So there's all sorts of different situations, and each one has to be attended to and treated accordingly. But generally, one, two, three, when the jails are overloaded. Three means one fellow or lady is lying on the floor, hopefully on something warm enough to keep them going, and I think that is the case. But generally speaking, their head would be beside the toilet, and the other two people would be on the only two bunks in there. And when someone needed to use the toilet, you can see what an uncomfortable kind of situation that be. It might be for the third person in the cell. But these things happen, and it's just a way of life. And amazingly enough, you don't hear much about that, even when you're allowed, as we are, to go right inside the institutions and be shoulder to shoulder and hand to hand with these fellows and these gals. You know, they don't bother talking about it because nothing much is ever done about it. And that's something we'd like to see change. And, you know, again, but for the grace, you know, if it wasn't for the kindness of something greater, there'd be a lot more of us in those places because we don't get well when we mix under circumstances that are compromising and uncomfortable and unfair. You know, one is treated properly, the other is not. One guard's easy to get along with, the other is not. One is mean, one is friendly, one is moody, just like the rest of life. And I'm not blaming the guards or the system for that. That's just the way people are. But that's difficult when you are the on the bottom rung, put it that way. When you're somewhere where you're told what to do, a person with a bad day who wasn't able to tell their children to do anything and have good results would come to work not feeling so well, and they're not able to keep control of things at home. So they'll try harder at work, and of course at work, and you're an inmate, you're obliged to go along with whatever they say. So it's a tough and it's a uncompromising kind of situation, and you really have to be a bit of a juggler to be able to handle all these different types of moods and so on that could come at you in there. One of many, many situations that people in jail live through day by day. Another possibility, in terms of slogans that may help is one day at a time. And Jason and I were talking a little bit before the show about this reading yesterday, today, and tomorrow, thinking that, well, in reality, we've got to narrow that down to a minute, to an hour, to a day for, we'll take an alcoholic, for example, a day for an alcoholic who's been drinking every day of his or her life for maybe years, maybe not so long, maybe many, many years. The thought of 24 hours without what really medicates them to the point that they can stand life, whether that's physical, mental, emotional, or some combination of same by the time they've come to something in their life that says, no matter what, this has got to stop or I'm going to die. And that is the true situation so often. So, you know, how do we treat someone who, 24 hours looks like such a giant, giant obstacle? Well, we narrow it back down. We say, well, let's talk to you for a minute. Let's talk to you for half an hour. Let's spend an hour. Let's spend the better part of the day together. Let's go and you know, let's go to coffee. Let's have some lunch. Let's talk some more. And you know, the first thing you know, there's 8 hours that have gone by, and, you know, and then 12 and then 24. And aside from the withdrawal factor, which is huge, by the way, especially on certain drugs and alcohol, I mean, the shakes, the nightmares, the sweats, and all these things are really, really tough to put up with, and many can't. Many will do whatever at that point to go and get some more of the medication, if you will, because it is medication when you get to that point. And a real key factor, too, folks, to remember is that an addict, an alcoholic, a compulsive, an overeater, an undereater, a gambler, all of these things that people kind of lose control over a bit of time are today known, at least by the American Medical Association, likely the biggest on the planet, it's accepted as disease, because these people really, somewhere along the line, whether it's drinking, drugging, eating, whatever, spending, when we lose control, we've given control of our lives over to a substance, over to a habit, a behavior, and that is just incorrect. So, you know, we've got to think ahead a little bit when we get into these situations. So, anyway, back down to the moment and the so on. So you can see how it does extend itself, and let's face it, logically and truthfully, I believe if someone makes one day, they can make 2 days, they can make three, they can make four. But what I've seen, especially in the world of alcoholics and drug addicts, is that every day has to be looked at as the day that they're working on. They don't calculate how many days they have every time they sit down or how many they're aiming for. They just take that one day and they say to themselves such sayings as we used the first one, but for the grace of God, I got up this morning, I woke up, and at the end of the day, thank you. Thank you to whatever they believe in for giving me another day and letting me successfully pass through it without the use of a certain behavior or substance and so on. Difficult, difficult situation. But, one day at a time, there's another one for you. One day at a time, one moment at a time, 1 hour at a time, whatever it takes. Let's try and move on to another a slogan here that a lot of people use. And there's one that's simply the word think. Now, what do? Well, when we think, we kind of get quiet, and that's what I do. And we call some of that thinking that I do dead space, or what do we call that, Jay, when it goes dead on the radio?
Dead air.
Dead air, that's what we're thinking of. Yeah, that's... And folks, will you ever hear some dead air around me? That's because I'm doing that. I'm thinking. And, we teach people to, if they can, especially if they're really compulsive, and a lot of us are in many ways, we don't think. We react rather than respond. Respond takes some sort of a thinking process, whereas reaction is something that's instant, knee-jerk kind of thing. And we get in so much trouble that way. So it's another thing we use the slogans for. If we can, if we're in a place where we can actually think, we have another slogan I'll mention here. And it's just the word stop. We print that on a sheet with all these other slogans when we're talking about them. And we print that big stop sign in red and put it right at the top. And what that's come to mean to most of us is that, if anger's an issue, if anxiety manifests itself in an angry situation for us, then we've got to find a way to stop before the anger goes any distance. In other words, if we're able to remember or to equate the red stop sign with emotion, we'll be able to come across really well. So what I'm saying there is there needs to be an emotional sobriety existing for a person to be able to just function properly, to be alive, true, and pure. Now, think of emotional sobriety as just a flat line going across in front of you, across the screen, whatever you're your likenesses to putting this into reality. And and that line, you know, starts to shake, starts to go up and down as you start losing focus wherever you are, and something is coming in the way in your mind and you're not able to let it go for whatever reason. And the first thing you know, you're focused, you're not really focused on whatever you wanted to focus on. You're now starting to focus on the thing that's your problem. And usually from there's an escape mechanism that works in you. And the first thing you know, you're using the escape mechanism that could become or is an addiction. And you're once again in the mode of going that way rather than staying where you were in the first place. So, you know, there's so many different ways to look at addiction, compulsion, but if you take and accept, as the American Medical Association does, that this is a disease and to be treated as a disease, you may think twice before, you know, just stepping over the fellow who's trying to sleep on the street at 20 below zero, and maybe you'll, number one, make sure he or she's alive, that they've had something to eat, and, you know, that their thoughts for today run a little bit into tomorrow, that they're not, you know, simply living to exist, but, you know, living to be functional and productive too. They just cannot. You know, a combination of mental illness and addiction will do that. They simply cannot. And those of you who know, for instance, real depression, clinical depression, you know that if I want to do something really, really seriously and I'm in that situation where I'm almost in bed, can't answer a phone, the thought of getting up is too much, the thought of having to fill in one line on an application is too much, just the phone ringing is too much. When you're in that situation, you are paralyzed. And I know that one, so I can talk about it. And it's another thing, if we don't know something, we can't talk much about it. But I do know that, and I know there are times, or have been times, when I'm absolutely unable to do anything. And you know, someone says, what do you mean you're unable? Why can't you just do this? Why can't? I don't have any reason or understanding of why. I just know what is. And I know many, many, many who have lived the same thing. And, you know, professionals will tell you if you live in such a situation for a week or two, you'd better see somebody, because for whatever reason, you're in a clinically depressed zone, and that can be dangerous for you, for others, and, you know, specifically more for you. And, you know, nobody wants to feel that way, and nobody deserves, in my opinion, to feel that way. So, you know, all we can do is kind of work therapy, find those with support mechanisms that have kept them in emotional sobriety long enough to keep them from other usages, whether that be drugs, behaviors, booze, whatever it is. You know, they've been able to keep away from it, you know, with support, and with not only support, but the support of people who have gone before and had maybe many days, many months, many years of sobriety from a behavior or a drug habit or a drinking habit. So it's all possible, but folks, it takes all of those things. It takes, you know, something higher than ourselves. And some people just see something higher than themselves by looking at a group, by looking at those who have made it in a certain area. In our case, you know, made it out of compulsion, addiction, and alcoholism. And I don't mean that they're cured, but they're living, they're coping, they're going day by day, they're productive. But they stick to their program for life, which generally, in our cases, is something along the line of the 12-step philosophy, first developed by AA back in the 1930s. You know, and it works. And the only reason we talk a little bit about it once in a while and mention the 12 steps is that they're by far the most successful way of supporting and helping people stay away from those things. You know, and I'm serious. I mean the most. You know, at this very moment, there are probably 10 million people in a form of sobriety from whatever their problem or their issue or their dependency or their drug happens to be, but they are sober at this moment
because they work some kind of program. More than likely, they work it in one way or another every day of their life. And they hang around people who know where they are, where they've been, and new people coming on. Without the new people.
And for you who are listening to me on Facebook, if you were, we're going to take a little break until we come back and do some more of this discussion. And so much more. And that's just a touch of the touch. So, folks, thanks for bearing with me, whoever was able to. God bless you, and we'll look forward to connecting with you in the future.